Welcome to Season 5 of Game Design Unboxed on the No Direction Network. Danielle Reynolds talks to tabletop game designers about the games they've made. Together, they unbox how the game went from inspiration to publication.
This season is proudly sponsored by Allplay. If you've been following my social media, aka Token Gay Mer, you'll see that my Allplay gaming table gets used on the daily when I'm not flying to different conventions. Between hosting meals on it as a dining room table or removing the panels and adding the cup holders for a Friday night game night as a board gaming table, it gets used constantly. It's also perfect for being a working station for me building my ridiculous amount of prototypes. It honestly gets used more than I ever would have expected. Not to mention, it's great for hiding games and their pieces from my cats. Sans is my little box sitter, while Nova tries to steal the dice as Banshee watches from high atop the cat tower. I've caught them attempting to take dice from Allplay's Sequoia and Mountain Goats, two of my favorite Allplay games that my non-gamer friends adore. We play a lot of party games, and these two, they don't mind me taking out instead. So check out Allplay's tables, bags, playmats, and board games at allplay.com. Thank you for joining me, Danielle, for Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, Episode 99, Arboretum. Today, we are joined by Dan Kazar, the designer of Arboretum, as well as a soon-to-be starting up a new publishing company. Thanks for being on the show, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm super happy to have you. And for anyone who doesn't already know you, how did you get into designing board games or card games?
I have been designing games as far back as, well, not quite as far back as I can remember, but almost. So I got introduced to chess when I was like probably 7 or 8 years old by my grandfather. And then immediately, I totally remember this too, like after playing chess a bunch, like I spent like an entire weekend playing chess with my grandfather, who, by the way, just mercilessly just beat me again and again and again.
I mean, I think that's the correct thing though to do with children, like don't just let them win.
Exactly. I took the same approach with my kids. You know, I'm a little more forgiving with other people's kids, but my kids know I don't go easy. Because like my grandfather always said and said at that time, he said, you learn nothing from winning, right? Because if you won, sure, whatever you did, it worked, right? But if you lose, you know, then you're incentivized to go back and, you know, examine what you did. You don't learn anything by winning, was his contention. But anyway, so, and I remember after being, you know, beaten up by him for a weekend on the chessboard, I just started asking myself, oh, you know, why does the game, you know, why do the pieces move like that? Why is this so interesting? You know, and then like started making, well, what if it moved this way? What would that change? And yeah, played with that, you know, and then not long after that, I was just voraciously playing everything I could get my hands on and just wanted to understand games. You could say I've been a little obsessed my whole life. Just the idea that like you're creating this whole experience just out of some numbers and pieces of paper, because growing up for me was, you know, the 80s, and so Dungeons and Dragons was this like still relatively new phenomenon, and you know, my older brother taught it to me, and like talk about creating a world with, you know, just some numbers and, you know, some things written down on a piece of paper. It's just, I really think that time, late 70s into the 80s, was really kind of a golden age. Games were changing a lot, and so I got into games just because I just feel like there was just so much happening, and then I just started playing, and I just have had a policy ever since. If there's a game out there that I have not played and it looks interesting, I want to play it. So I've played all kinds of weird things, whatever I can get my hands on. So I have been trying to make games, kind of everything I did. Like I'm a professional programmer. I write software. I run a software development team for a company that makes cloud software now. But that job, because I taught myself how to program, and I taught myself how to program because I wanted to make games. And, you know, I got my first job in a print shop because I knew how to do graphic design, because I learned how to, I taught myself how to do graphic design because I wanted to make games. It's been sort of this quest to, you know, acquire all the necessary skills over time.
I think that's awesome. I'm a big proponent of you don't always need a degree in order to do certain things. Like, don't be a doctor without one. But something like graphic design or like a lot of the tech fields, I feel like you can self-teach yourself a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I agree with that. Especially nowadays. I mean, when I was coming up and learning how to program, I learned out of magazines and books. There was, you know, this was pre-internet. It was a little harder back then.
No YouTube and everything and Googling everything like I do.
Exactly. It's so much easier now. But in a way that makes it harder because you don't have something authoritative. You've just got like stuff and you got to find out like, is this worthwhile? Is this going to teach me something good? You know, you can definitely teach yourself stuff and people do all the time. You can take Harvard classes online these days, right? You can learn almost anything on the internet.
Very, very true. It's still depending how much you want to spend, though, when you do things like that. You can either pay to learn, or if you're good enough at Googling and figuring out the right videos and the right blogs and stuff, then you can just learn for free and teach yourself, which is pretty cool. Let's switch over to Arboretum. For anyone who has not played this game, would you mind just giving like a brief overview of like how to play it? What's it about?
Arboretum is a hand management card game. I often call it a traditional style card game. It's colors and numbers. The deck is 10 colors and numbered 1 through 8. On your turn, you draw two cards and play one to your Arboretum and then discard one. Every player has their own discard pile, and over time you are playing cards adjacent to the first one that you played and building up an arboretum of cards. Each card has a tree on it with a number 1 through 8 and a color, and what you're trying to do is build paths that will score at the end of the game. But the twist is that in order to score a path for a color, you have to have the greatest sum of cards of that color remaining in your hand at the end of the game. Otherwise, you cannot score it.
Yeah, I remember playing this. This is one of the first games I ever played when I learned about the hobby, and I had a hard time balancing the idea of, oh wait, I should keep some of these cards in my hand that are the same as some of the stuff out there so I can score it. Wait, what? I definitely made a few boo-boos on that one. Especially because don't you have a rule with like the ones and the eights, like one knocks out an eight?
Correct. You know, it was interesting. That was kind of the last piece of the game to kind of come together, because it was one of these things where the game was going through a bunch of playtesting and I was pretty happy with it. But something I noticed was that people kept playing out their ones and holding their eights. So I wanted to, you know, organically incentivize players to break that up. The idea is like, right, you have to have this highest total in your hand. So the highest card is an eight, so a lot of people would hold the eight in their hand to make sure that they would score. But the rule is that if a different player is holding the one of that color, it makes your eight count as zero in your hand. It makes you have to pay attention to where the ones are and the eights, and you know, if you see them on the table or if you don't, that can give you some information.
And then when you're drawing the cards, there is a general draw deck, but also you can draw from the discards, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that's right. So in this game, each player has a personal discard pile. So at the end of your turn, you're going to discard a card to your own discard pile. But when you draw cards, each card can be drawn either from the top of the deck, which is face down, or from the top of any player's discard pile. So there's always a bunch of choices there. And the reason I did that was because I love drafting. Drafting is probably one of my favorite mechanics. I feel like it's criminally underused. So I really wanted to that drafting type mechanic. Like in a four-player game, you'll have four discard piles, so you can draft from amongst the last cards that each other player discarded, or that you discarded for that matter, or you can go fish through the deck, but the game ends when the deck runs out, so you have to also keep that in mind.
And when you're forming these like pathways through the Arboretum at the end, are these pathways supposed to be like horizontal, vertical, diagonal, like zigzaggy? How do we score that part?
The way it works is that a path in the game is a series of orthogonally adjacent ascending valued cards that start and end on the same color. So that's a lot to say, but it's not as hard as it sounds. So if you start out a one, let's say it's blue, you could go to a red three, which is to its left, and then you can go to a yellow five to its left, but then below it hit a green six, and then to its right, a red eight. And you'll notice you can jump value there, but as long as you're always going up, I don't know if I started on red, but let's pretend I did. I think I started on a different color, but that's all right. Pretend I started and ended on the same color because I'm not looking at cards. I'm kind of making it up. But the idea here is that it doesn't matter which direction you're traveling as long as the numbers are always going up. And if it starts and ends on the same color, then that is the color of the path that you are scoring. So that's how that works. And you get 1 point per card along the path, and then plus two if it ends with an eight, and plus one if it starts with a one. If it's all the same and at least four cards, then it's doubled. The reason I did that actually was because when I was designing the game, I had actually kind of started from the idea that I had gotten from Reiner Knizia's Lost Cities. So I love that game. I was playing Lost Cities a ton at that time when I came up with the idea for Arboretum. So I had visited the local Arboretum. My ex-wife, she loved the Arboretum not too far away from our house. And we would go there to visit pretty frequently. And we'd be playing Lost Cities together, you know, in the evenings a lot of times. And I was just really into this game. We played this a lot. And I just loved the idea that, you know, I think Kunitia gets a lot of commentary about, you know, how his themes are sometimes thin, you know, but I've never really agreed with that. I think Kunitia, like me, likes to zoom out a bit, and he likes to abstract his mechanics to a point. You know, people say that the theme isn't there, but I think he's just abstracting the mechanics, you know, a little further than some other designers. So that's why I really like Kunitia's work, because I feel like he and I kind of see things a lot of the same way. I actually met Kunitia once, but didn't get a chance to talk to him too in deep about that. But this was actually before I had designed Arboretum, unfortunately. But anyway, he had used this idea in Lost Cities of using ascending valued cards to represent a journey, right? Like, because in Lost Cities, like, you start low and you go high, right? You start with investment cards and then you can go on this journey and eventually you get to the Lost City, right? You're like going on this expedition. When you're visiting an arboretum, you're sort of meandering, you know, you're just kind of wandering and kind of taking in the scenery and then kind of, you know, right, seeing what's there and, you know, looking around. And so it was interesting. I was like, well, you are walking around, you're making progress, and you eventually get someplace, but it doesn't really matter how you got there, you know? And I started thinking about this metaphor, like, you know, using the cards for kind of more linear journey. Well, what would that look like? And then I hit on this idea that kind of like plants, kind of like a garden, you could sort of start in the middle and work your way out and watch it grow, right? And so that's where I came up with the idea that you would like play a card, right? And then you'd play an adjacent card, you know, that represented the next thing that grew out from there. And you could grow in all the directions in kind of however, whatever shape you wanted. And then at the end, the path would sort of emerge, right? You would see this pathway through that just kind of came about as you were exploring, if that makes sense.
No, it definitely makes sense. I find it interesting because it's like you do say like you are building orthogonally, but it does become like zigzaggy in how you do your pathways, because you did mention like you could go up, you could go down. I feel like a lot of games where you have ascending numbers, it's like you can only be in straight lines. So I found that very interesting when you're kind of looking at this map. But when you do go to an arboretum or botanical gardens or like a forest, you're not on a straight path. You are like looping around. You are seeing the same tree maybe twice, but they're part of different pathways. So I thought that was pretty cool. I think it is, like, the abstracted theme is there.
Yeah, it may not be immediately obvious, but that's kind of what I was going for. I tried a bunch of different things, actually. Like, that mechanism, that was sort of like, a lot of people say, do you start with a theme or do you start with a mechanic? I actually started with, the original idea for this was the name. I just thought Arboretum is a cool word, and so I thought it'd make a cool name for a game. I remember like coming home from the Arboretum thinking to myself, oh, Arboretum's a cool name. Well, what would that be like? And then I got into this whole idea about the paths. I just think that coming up with the game was like, once I hit on that idea, like that was there from the very beginning, but I couldn't figure out how to score it at all because, you know, I tried it in the most straightforward way, right? Where you were just kind of building these paths and then scoring them, right? Like that's kind of the straightforward way to handle something like that. You would say, okay, I'm gonna make some sets, right? And then I'm gonna score those sets. And I played it and it worked and it was boring. It just, you know, it did not work at all. And I remember, you know, sitting at the table, like right with my, cause I'm playing four-handed by myself, you know, right? Trying to figure out how people would be looking at it. And I remembered looking at the different arboretums, because originally I tried a common arboretum, then I tried everybody separately, and I liked the gameplay when everything was separate. But then, you know, I remember laying it all out and seeing everybody's hands, like, right, because you have everybody's hands face up as you're playtesting. And I remember staring there, like, looking at all those cards, and then going, huh, well, I've got some of these over here, and he's got some of these over there, but I was holding some of these extra. And then it just dawned on me, looking at all the hands face up, I was like, oh, well, I mean, that shows you controlled that color, right? You were kind of paying attention to that. I really just love the way that all sort of just happened to work, where, you know, if you could pay attention to where all the different cards for each color were, you could effectively control who was able to score it because you knew where those cards were. Maybe you couldn't do it yourself. If you were following the deck, you could figure out where all the cards were eventually, because you end up with perfect information, right? Eventually the deck is all revealed, but over time, you had to make plays, you know, that forced you into those decisions early before you knew all of that. Once I saw that and it, you know, came together, it all just sort of fell into place.
How did you address ties if two people had like maple or whatever tree of the same amount?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, the tiebreaker in the rules is something that people do talk about because there's this thing in the rule book that says if you're still tied, you need to go plant a tree. Whichever one grows the tallest after 10 years, they're the winner. Is that the tiebreaker that you're referring to?
I mean, that was funny, but also I was just more so mentioning when someone has like a hand of cards and they've added up numbers to try to score and it's supposed to be whoever has the highest and that number were to tie. So like someone has like a 1 and a 6 and the other person has like a 3 and a 4 or something of the same maple tree.
Well, then you both get the right to score. Friendly ties, right? That's what happens in that case.
I mean, also that works. Just make someone go make a tree and play really the long game for the actual tiebreaker. That's hilarious.
You know, the funny thing was my original version of the rules I had for as a joke in there that if you were tied, you had to fight to the death with pruning shears because I just thought that was hilarious. And but then I realized I probably shouldn't keep that in the rules. I'm not sure that would be terribly ethical. You know, hey, the rules say so. You got to do it.
I was thinking also a lot of times arboretums have a lot of volunteer staff. I don't think they'd be fighting each other. Normally like a lot of nicer, older individuals being very friendly and smiley.
Well, they don't call it murder trees for nothing.
See, my favorite tree is actually an aspen. And we learned like when it gets cut, it will bleed the maple or like maple syrupy kind of like stuff. And it looks like blood. It's kind of like this amberish red color when it does that. And it makes me sad. But I'm like, oh, and then it scars over and like bruises black. And it's so interesting to me. But they're all connected. So you cut one, you're cutting them all. Such a bummer. So at what point did you feel like, hey, this game is good, I'm gonna pitch it? Or did someone see it? Like, how did you end up having it land with Renegade Games?
So that's actually another sort of involved story because Renegade was not the initial publisher. I finished the game. So I actually brought the game to Metatopia, which is this game convention in northern New Jersey. One of the regulars who used to go to those conventions was Zev Schlesinger. He's the founder of Z-Man Games, who I'm sure you know. So I was actually just, you know, running sessions of my game, playtesting there, and he had heard from another player about the game and wanted to see it. And it was funny, I was just testing the 1 and the 8 rule. Like, you know, I just added it that day. that was like the last rule that I had added. And then I showed him the game. He wanted to take a copy. So I, you know, handed it to him and then he walked away and then I heard nothing. And then I went back the next year to Metatopia. So for a whole year, heard nothing, just assumed it was a no. And then I saw him at the next Metatopia. He's like, oh yeah, we're gonna publish your game. And I was like, oh, okay. That's how I learned that it had gotten signed by Z-Man. It's interesting. One of the reasons that happened was because that was around the time he was getting acquired by Philosophia. This happened quite a while ago. This was back in 2014, I think. So he had just gotten acquired, and then there was like some discussion about what was going to happen with the game. It eventually comes out as part of their sort of deluxe card game series, but wasn't widely printed. I think they only printed a certain amount, and you know, I think it got one additional printing, and that was it. But it had sold out, and you know, people wanted it. It was under contract with Z-Man, but then Zev had actually left the company to go work for, I think he had gone to work for WizKids right after that. Z-Man was being, you know, got acquired by Philosophia and then by Asmodee. I think what happened is that in the shuffle, my contract actually had expired because they hadn't reprinted it. So then I was able to reacquire the rights, and then I had actually just sold my later game called The Blood of an Englishman to Renegade in 2016. So in 2015, Arboretum had come out. They knew that game. So then they wanted to see Blood of an Englishman. They signed that. But then when I was able to reacquire the rights several years later, I was able to bring Arboretum to Renegade. They did a great second edition.
Yeah, I'm so familiar with like that edition. I forgot that there was that kind of green box one with Z-Man.
Yeah, it's there's not that many of them, but there's some out there.
Did you have a preference on which art direction you preferred?
I love them both, but they're both pretty different. I really love the classic style of the original Z-Man version, but the Renegade version is so beautiful, and Beth Sobel's art is just gorgeous.
It's hard to beat that. I am hoping someday to have some game with her art.
Oh, it's just incredible, isn't it? Yeah, incredible work.
Super talented. So how long do you think it took in total from like that initial inspiration to the first printing with Z-Man games?
That one is, I think, gotta be the quickest. From initial inspiration to actual publication, it took me probably about a year to develop the game. And then, like I said, I pitched it, I showed it to Zev, and he had taken the prototype and then sat on it for a while. In the meantime, I was actually moving ahead with the design and had considered some changes to it because I was like, you know, because I had shown it to a couple of other publishers who turned it down. And so I was like, oh, you know, maybe I should try this or that. So a whole extra year went by after that, and then it got signed. So, and then probably didn't see print until maybe another year after that. So something like 2 to 3 years, depending how you're counting.
Yeah, it's a pretty good timeline. How do you think the game went once you got a second edition with a different company? So it was well received. I know you ended up winning a few awards and also got some nominations for it.
Yeah, it was nominated for a couple of Golden Geeks and won a UK Games Expo award.
That's so cool. How'd that feel?
Pretty cool, I have to say. I mean, you know, always nice to be recognized. I'm just happy people are playing it and enjoying it.
And did you have like a favorite and a least favorite part of the experience? The design process of like it being out, the development?
My favorite thing, if I had to pick, no fewer than 3 different people email me and tell me stories about them making proposals to their spouses using my game, Arboretum. 2 different people said that they made versions of Arboretum with pictures from their history together as a couple. I think one did it as a gift and one did it as a proposal thing. And then another person actually made the game, like did the proposal during the game. So it's just like realizing that something you created is a part of somebody's life and their story like that. That's incredible. That's really humbling, you know, and that's all you want as a game designer, right? You want to share that little spark with people, you know, you want people to inhabit your world for a little while. That's why being a game designer is so cool.
Yeah, I can honestly say no one has proposed using any of my games so far. I could see someone doing a breakup with caution signs. That would be pretty freaking funny, but...
That'd be awesome. I don't know if they'd be sending you emails about it necessarily.
I would like to think I don't want to get that. No, I already get enough people that send me like funny warning signs that they see. I don't know if I need that. But I mean, that's really cool though. Did they send you pictures? Or was it just like a story?
No pictures. It's just the story. Like, well, a lot of them ask for permission. They're like, oh, do you mind? I'm like, of course I don't mind.
You're like, why? That's so weird that they'd even ask.
Yeah, well, I think they feel guilty or something. Like, no, it's that's awesome. I don't know about a least favorite part, having to wait a year and not knowing what the fate of the game was. That's probably the most uncomfortable bit, but no, I cannot complain. The game has sold pretty well and people are still telling me how much they enjoy it. So yeah, I can't ask for much more than that.
That's awesome. Did you stop pitching when you were waiting?
I did not. I'm still doing research and working on the design and, you know, like, because I hadn't heard anything for a while. I had just assumed it was no.
Honestly, that's what I typically do. I pitch to a bunch of publishers at once. And if I don't hear from them, I'm assuming just a no. And then if they randomly come back up later and I still have the game, I'm like, great. But typically I feel like silence never is a good thing. So the fact that you had silence for that long and then got a game out, that's awesome.
Yeah, it doesn't happen often, but sometimes.
Yeah, totally. If you could offer a piece of advice to like game designers making a game somewhat like that, what would you offer as advice?
Well, in terms of getting the game published, it's funny because I don't know that I have a lot of great advice to offer because I feel like the time when I was coming up, I got my first game published back in, I sold it in 2009, quite a long time ago now, 15 years. And that was Rio Grande Games. The way that happened was just sort of luck. I'd entered a game into a game design contest that they had run and then was able to win that. I was one of 4 winners that they picked. And so that's how I got my first game out. And I felt like that made it easier to maybe get a little bit of attention later. I feel like the publishing landscape is just so fundamentally different now, because back then there was no online testing. The only way to get playtesters was to go to conventions. I used to go to all the local conventions just for no other reason than to find people to play my games. Game groups weren't as prevalent. You know, it was just a very different landscape then. Nowadays, I just feel like, yeah, there's so many options, you know, which is good and bad, right? It's good because there's lots of opportunities, but it's bad because there's just so much competition. I really do feel like, you know, getting a game out there many years ago, you know, I would go to playtesting events and, you know, meet other designers and see their games. And I would say a good number of them were just not any good. Whereas nowadays, I find that the level that the bar is just so much higher. I just feel like games in general are just so much better, you know, just your typical game that a designer will bring to one of these events is, you know, I think the average bar is much higher today than it was. So in terms of advice to give other designer trying to get a game out there, I think the number one thing is, you know, just exposure, right? Like, you have to have a good game, right? Make sure you are putting it in front of strangers and you have a good realistic sense of how good your game is. Remember, your game's not going to be for everybody, right? But you need that excitement coming from your player base. Otherwise, there's just too many other good games out there. You have to be able to stand out. And a lot of times that means, you know, having a web presence and being online and, you know, promoting yourself. But yeah, that's just the way it all works now. So I think we all kind of have to contend with that as designers.
I can't even imagine. I feel like I lucked out in the timing of when I joined and like figured out about the hobby, because a lot of these like online things were starting to happen, and that definitely helped me shoot faster, was because I was able to learn that stuff pretty quick. I can't imagine how difficult it was back then. And there is a lot more people, that is true. Like, I love the accessibility now that you can like pitch online, which is pretty cool. You don't need to be able to afford to go to conventions anymore. I mean, yes, it still definitely helps for networking, but it's actually not necessary anymore.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, what a different world than it used to be. It's a double-edged sword. I just think, you know, and I try to look at it as well, you know, it's just pushing me to make them better. So that's what I'm trying to do.
Hey, I'm just happy I'm not like an athlete, because I could not. I've seen the Olympics. I used to think I was good at swimmering. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm flounder out of water, please.
Yeah.
I think that's good advice. You are starting up a publishing company, so you at least have something to talk about. But what should people be looking out for? What is this company? What is the game you're putting out? Tell me more.
Yeah, so actually, this new game that I'm putting out is called Mischief, and it's actually a spiritual successor to Arboretum. When I was designing Arboretum, I think I told you that I was looking at the hands and kind of realized that based on what people were holding, you know, it meant that they were, you know, controlling that color. When I started having that insight about the way the interaction would work between points on the board, you know, that are public versus what's remaining in your hand as a, you know, cool source of tension, I just immediately almost sought this other way to do it, where I was just like, oh, wait a minute, I could do this whole different way where it's sort of backwards. And then I was like, no, that's a separate game. And so I kind of put it away and put it on the shelf. And then after selling Arboretum, I took it down and, you know, played with it and then put it back because I couldn't get it to work, and then took it down. And yeah, that was 12 years ago. That I did all of that. And now it is finally ready. So it's playing in the same mechanical space as Arboretum, where you have to pay attention to what's on the board versus what's in your hand, but it just does it in a very different way. So Mischief is a game for 2 to 4 players, plays in about 30 minutes, just like Arboretum. It's hand management as its core. The way it works is there are light and dark cards in 7 different colors. Depending on player count, you use different numbers of colors. And when you play cards, you play them to either the light side or the dark side, and the two sides will interact. So basically, the theme is you are fairy nobles who are attending this wedding feast. The king and queen of the Seelie and Unseelie court are ending their rivalry, so they're getting married. So they've invited all the fairies to come have a big celebration in a forest glade. And when you have good and evil fairies all together, you shenanigans will ensue. And that's why it's called Mischief, because each card shows a little fairy prank, and you can eliminate fairies from the party or invite new fairies in to affect who has the most influence with the royal couple at each table. Yeah, so the company's called Dream Cult Game Studio. I called it that because I feel like games are like shared dreams, right? We all inhabit this same imaginative space. We all tell a story together. We all follow rules and, you know, engage in our rituals sort of like a cult. So that's why we're the Dream Cult. And that's why, you know, I want to make games that are unique experiences that are, you know, going to be deep and accessible and offer, you know, simple but really engaging gameplay, kind of like Arboretum did. And Mischief is more of the same. I hope people will agree. So we're going to be coming to Kickstarter October 1st. So I hope people will get the chance to check that out. I think we're supposed to be releasing sometime after that, but the Kickstarter campaign should be ongoing when you hear this, if you are listening to this at launch. I hope you'll come to Kickstarter and check it out. The game is called Mischief.
Awesome. Yeah, it sounds really fun. I like the theme. It sounds cutesy, which is my jam. So for my last question, I want to ask, if you could have designed a game that isn't something you made, what game would you pick?
This is a tough question. So I think my first answer, it's a little dissatisfying, but I think I would say Magic the Gathering, and not for the obvious reason that it's just, you know, the most successful gaming property on the planet. But I think Magic just had so many great just foundational ideas for what a card game could be specifically, right? I really feel like Richard Garfield did for the card game what Gary Gygax did for the war game, right? He transformed what it could be, sort of reimagined it in this kind of holistic way. So I think, you know, Magic just has so many great game ideas in there. And it's beyond just the collectability and all of that, just the core gameplay. And the fact that they are still making cards 35 years later is just pretty impressive as a feat of public-facing game design. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, trading card games just still blow my mind. I'm like, how does it not break more? So crazy. But I feel like it outdates things constantly, though.
Yeah, it does. I mean, you know, that's the short answer to how they manage that is they rotate, right? So if you can keep the last couple of years relatively balanced, you're okay. That's changing a bit for some games, but I still think that the core game of Magic, like if you take just the core mechanics of it, the combat of it, it still works great. And it's pretty amazing that a game like that, you know, that is really at heart pretty simple, can last that long. I think the maybe better, you know, shorter answer would have been the Mind, because that's such a cool mechanic. Have you played the Mind?
I have. I'm one of those people that falls into the park of not liking it, but also I like a lot of games like it, which is very interesting, but I don't yuck other people's yum. And you are not the only person who has said this game as their favorite before that they wish they had designed.
Oh, it's not that it's my favorite game, you know, given that I do enjoy it, but it's such a clever mechanic, you know, right? I think Varsh is kind of amazing like that, right? He came up with all kinds of really interesting, like, have you played Illusion? That's the one where you have to guess the amount of color in an image, which is just super weird.
Yeah, I think I have. I know the box, yeah.
So cool. I think he does some really great things with really original mechanics like that. So yeah, very cool.
Well, thanks so much for everyone who's been listening to this episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication, episode 99, Arboretum. And thanks again, Dan, for being on the show. For anyone trying to find you, I know you've already said on Kickstarter, you can find Mischief, but where can they find you, the designer?
You can find out all the stuff that I'm doing on dancassar.com, dancassar.com.
And I'm your host, Danielle Reynolds. If you're trying to find me on social media, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Blue Sky, all under Token Gamer. And that's GAYMER, as well as my website, dmrcreativegroup.com. Thanks so much for being on the show. This was a great talk. And now I feel like I need to go be in some nature.
Take care, Danielle. Thanks.
Thank you for joining Danielle for another episode of Game Design Unboxed, Inspiration to Publication. If you'd like to hear more great gaming podcasts, check out nodirectionpodcast.com. And if you're looking for a great board game, bag, playmat, or table, check out All Play at letsallplay.com. Join us next time.